So, as if you, if a student was gonna just trying to decide, do I pick a pure math degree, applied math degree? What do you think? Like, what's the like most important classes for each discipline?
So, I actually think that at the undergraduate level, pretty much equally important for both disciplines. That I took as an undergraduate, I took an applied math class in PDEs. I actually only audited it because my advisor told me I had too much on my plate. But I don't know if I'm the only student at Colorado State to have audited that class and have taken every test. But I took every test, even though I was auditing it because I wanted to learn the stuff. And it really helped me think about how certain things work. And so I think as a pure mathematician, none of those classes hurt you. You do need to take, I mean, real analysis is really important for both. I think everybody should take a good statistics class. I did not, and it's something I've regretted for the last 20 years that I did not take a good statistics class as an undergraduate. It just didn't fit into my schedule. I've learned it on the fly, where I wish I didn't have to learn it on the fly sometimes. I think actually abstract algebra is helpful for applied math, but I know that a lot of the applied mathematicians I know don't feel that that's as strong. I'm an algebraist. Linear algebra, however, is absolutely imperative for everybody. It is probably the most important class, whatever you go into next, because today, that in the way that calculus really gets you started, linear algebra is just, it shows up everywhere in every which way. It's crucial, even in the data science that we've been talking about. It's hiding in the background of a lot of statistical methods. And if you don't know it's hiding in the background of the statistical methods, you lose things, which is why I think we see some unfortunate statistics out there in places that don't come out of the math world or the stats world. They sometimes don't think of the, oh, this is really just a linear algebra problem that's going on in the background. And so those would be my top choices.
I'm realizing that linear algebra is super important, and I'm wishing I was stronger in it. Looking at like applications for internships and stuff, on the like requirements, it's like good linear algebra skills. I'm like,
I'm actually
Yeah.
taking it right now, but I think it's such a fun class, though.
It can be. It can also be a horrible class,
Yeah,
depending on how it's
I guess.
taught. That's always the problem, is that if it's very cookbook, then it's not as useful. It's, on the other hand, it's this interesting complication of how much, right? So if, like, as I tried to learn to cook, because I really was a lousy cook for a long time, there's the, well, I need to follow some recipes before I go out and try to understand how things work, right? And when I went out and I just said, I'm going to do a stir fry, and I hadn't looked at any recipes, I mean, I roughly knew what went in, they weren't very good. And then I started looking at recipes like, oh, that's why you do that, right? And it's this back and forth that the proofs can help you understand the mechanics, but the mechanics can help you understand the proofs. And that back and forth is actually, I think, one of the things that makes it a really powerful, great class, because you can go both ways. It unfortunately can have a focus sometimes of the sort of, I'll call the high school mentality of, how do I multiply a 3x5 matrix by a 5x7 matrix? Let me go through all of these pieces, you know, in the long ago and far away, and I hope this isn't true today, and hopefully if it is true today, they're not going to listen to the podcast. You know, the by hand Gaussian elimination, that I had to do because computers were just coming in, and I had to do it with large matrices. And so, you know, and of course the numbers get hideous. But there's the joke that the applied mathematicians tell about the pure mathematicians is that the pure mathematicians think that when something has a non-zero determinant, it's invertible. So if, I don't know if that's, if you've done that one. And it's a joke because there are many matrices that do not have a non-zero determinant. And in one sense, of course, they're invertible. That's what the pure mathematics says. That is a theorem. But if you do it on a computer, and I don't care which computer you do it on, it is not invertible. That when you run it on the computer, well, the methods for finding the inverse that a computer uses is not the ridiculously slow method of trying to do the pure mathematical way of doing the inverse. It's a much faster method. But if the determinant is 0.01 and there are entries in the matrix that are like, say, 100, the inverse is going to be a very, very ugly thing.
Yeah.
And it's not something the computer is going to get to because of the methods of finding the inverse. And so it's a, that maybe is actually the better answer to what's the difference between the pure and the applied math.
Yeah.
The idea
yeah.
is, you know, what works in practice versus
yeah.
what works in theory. So.
So as the dean of CNSM, you oversee not just math majors, but all of the sciences.
You have to see them all.
Yeah. What do you think with, like, the workforce, there's, like, the talk of having everything's becoming more automated. What skills do you think are most important to develop since, like, if everything's automated and people are having to do less, we still need jobs. What skills do you think are the most important ones that we should?
I think it's the same ones that were true 40 years ago. I think it's critical thinking.
Mm-hmm.
It's really important to be able to look at a problem and say, how do I solve that problem?
Mm-hmm.
I think what the sciences sometimes get bad press on from the non-sciences is that we somehow don't teach critical thinking. I think that, you know, in each of our disciplines, everybody is teaching how do you problem solve
yeah.
in their own way, right? In mathematics, finding a proof
mm-hmm.
is a very specific type of problem solving. It forces you to organize your information.
Mm-hmm.
It forces you to come up with, well, what is it I can get from that information? What do I need? How do I put these two together? Well, that's also what's happening in a science class, in
yeah.
a science lab, is you're saying, what is it I need to know? How do I figure out what I need to know? Let me go through that process. Yes, there's the mechanics of running various things, but those are mechanics. They aren't the thinking skills. They aren't the skills that say, oh, how do I design something? How do I figure it out? It's a little more mechanical know-how needs to be there. If you're going to use CRISPR or something that's,
yeah.
you know, editing genes, then I need to add four numbers. But it's still there that how do I do this? That, you know, most of the problems that I've been working on, so I've done some consulting
mm-hmm.
in national defense, and most of those problems are problems that a computer can't just solve.
Yeah.
You know, they don't want the mathematician like me to get involved and think about these problems if they can just ask the computer to solve it. And truthfully, the computer could solve it. It'd just take its 100 million years. Well, that's not very useful
uh-huh.
yeah.
if you want to actually use it for, you know, whatever you might want to use it for, finding a terrorist or knowing what's going on, you know, where people are going to get attacked or any of those things. And so that's a very different need. But it's problem solving, saying, how can I get what I need? What can I do?
Mm-hmm.
And that's just a huge issue. Writing is another skill
mm-hmm.
that you have to be able to write.
Uh-huh.
You know? Now, in math, writing proofs is what really teaches you to write. And
yeah.
it teaches you to write not necessarily in a way that is what you want to put up, you know, in your favorite literature book, but it teaches you to write to get information across very crisply and clearly.
Yeah.
You know, that when I studied what mathematicians were taking away beyond mathematics, actually that was the one that came away top. And our math students, it was a study I did at LMU, our math students were taking outside of math to the real world their writing skills more than anything else. And that's what they saw themselves as doing. Everybody but the liberal arts professors saw that when we went to an education professor and said, can you talk about what differentiates the math majors from some of your other majors?
Mm-hmm.
It was the crispness, the conciseness of their writing. Now, for some, it was the terseness of their writing, which is not necessarily a good thing because,
yeah.
of course, that's the flip side of concise,
yeah.
right? But it was very much that how they wrote was very much like how they wrote a proof. But that was often seen as a very good thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
wow.
Okay.
Awesome.
So are you doing any research?
I still do research.
Wow.
It's a little hard to fit it in. So
sure.
right now I have a paper in submission. And I talked on it last year in the math department
okay.
at the colloquium.
I think I went to it.
Ah,
yeah,
cool.
I think I
so it's that paper was on, and I'm still interested in this problem of, as a combinatorialists, which is kind of where my more recent research has been, mm-hmm. combinatorialists count things. But one of the things is when numbers that shouldn't be integers turn out to be integers, we get very interested.
Yeah.
So the binomial coefficients are well known, that n factorial over k factorial times n minus k factorial,
mm-hmm.
or n choose k, as we say. And it's well understood why those are integers, that even though you have a division going on,
mm-hmm.
it's known that, well, that's really just the number of ways from n people you can choose a subset of k people.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it counts. Well, when we discover things that we don't know what they count but turn out to always be whole numbers, we get really curious about why that's true, because it's usually not an accident, or maybe it's an accident, but it's an accident that should count something. And
mm-hmm.
so it turns out that with the Fibonacci numbers,
mm-hmm.
If you replace the n, you know, n times n minus 1 times n minus 2 by the nth Fibonacci number times the n minus first Fibonacci number times the on down the line, and the k factorial on the bottom by the kth Fibonacci number times the down to the first Fibonacci number, and the n minus k by the n minus kth Fibonacci number to the first Fibonacci number,
mm-hmm.
that always turns out to be an integer.
Hmm.
And we can show numerically why that should be true. It's an induction proof. It's fairly
mm-hmm.
easy. But what does it count? Why, you know, sort of morally to me, mathematically
mm-hmm.
morally,
yeah.
it should count something. There should be
mm-hmm.
something out there that is reasonably nice that it counts. And so before I came here, my last year before I came here, I was working with a student, and we came up with what it counts,
mm-hmm.
Or a version of what it counts that was easier than the previous version that was out there. And I'm still working on that, and it's more with co-authors, because if I don't have co-authors, I just don't have time to get things done.
Mm-hmm.
But we're working on how to expand what that is to other things that are integers that we don't know why they should be integers, that we don't know what they count. And so, because it turns out there's a lot that goes on there, even more than the Fibonacci numbers. And so I'm still trying to understand that and figure out where that's going.
Yeah, I remember when I went to see that last year, I was a freshman, so I didn't understand anything.
But there were pretty pictures.
Yeah,
yes.
There were.
Yeah.
It's more interesting now that I
yeah.
understand a bit more.
That
makes sense.
Do you have any advice for both graduate and undergrad students in regards to picking a career? And is there anything that you wish you knew?
Well, I think it's worth, you know, being a professor is,
yeah.
is a fine career,
yeah.
but it's worth having the, what are the other things that I might do?
Yeah.
And what are the things that interest me? I think when I was an undergraduate, I was maybe a little on the left wing side, and I was like, I'll never ever do work for the government. because... You know, I had this picture. I mean, probably like today, Edward Snowden gave
mm-hmm.
people this picture of what the mathematicians at the NSA do.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Having worked for the government,
mm-hmm.
I will say that both my picture and I would argue the picture that Edward Snowden gave people are completely wrong.
Mm-hmm.
That a lot of what you do is really both really amazingly important in what it does for the world and is actually pretty ethical.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, when the Snowden stuff came out and the government said, oh, we're going to put the database not with the NSA, we're going to put it with AT&T, I was like, oh my God, you're giving this huge database to a private company that has no oversight?
Yeah.
you know, I was like, you know, I was thinking, yeah, I know that you've said that there are people at the NSA who checked up on former girlfriends through that site. I know the people at AT&T have told me that happens there too. It's
yeah.
not, it's just that there's no court that says you shouldn't do that, so
yeah.
you have nobody who knows.
Yeah.
And so it's that, you know, early on when I was first looking, because when I first came out of the job market, it was very bad.
Mm-hmm.
I was very lucky to find a postdoc. I was interviewing with somebody, and their comment was, well, search and destroy, which is one of the algorithms that his company had been working on, you know, yes, it's search and destroy. It's also search and rescue.
Mm-hmm.
That the same algorithms that help you find the hidden submarine
mm-hmm.
are the algorithms that help you find the ship that got lost at sea and save the people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the mathematics isn't evil
mm-hmm.
yeah.
and isn't there for destruction. It's the mathematics, and it can be used both ways. It's how we choose to use it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and in the same way, you know, cryptography isn't just about trying to break other people's secrets, it's trying to keep your own secrets.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and all of those things are out there, and so it opened my mind, as I say, you know, as a 20-year-old. You want to believe you know everything about the world at 20.
Mm-hmm.
When you have children who are 20, you discover how much that was true. And if you remember, it's like, oh God, I was like that once. And it's a good thing. We need that. That's not a bad thing. It's just that you think that you know everything, and then you discover, oh, there's more out there.
Yeah.
You know, I got recruited to go to an investment banking firm on the basis of being a mathematician. And again, there are great things that came out of that and bad things that came out of mathematicians doing investment banking.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much the 2008 housing market destruction was caused by mathematicians.
Mm-hmm.
That there was a problem to be solved, which
mm-hmm.
was how do you insure mortgages?
Mm-hmm.
And that created the credit default swap. And those were actually mathematicians who did finance who did that.
Yeah.
And that was then what led later on, because everybody misunderstood the market,
mm-hmm.
to the banking collapse.
Mm-hmm.
Today, there's this instant banking, I mean, not instant banking like on your cell phone, but micro investing, where people buy and sell shares, the same share, in a matter of microseconds
mm-hmm.
on the web. And it has good and bad.
Uh-huh.
Often when you see the market do a huge tank, it's because the computer programs are doing something that was unexpected that's causing everybody to just sell. And in
mm-hmm.
fact, at one point, they had to put in a rule that said that if the market had dropped this much, they shut down the computer programs.
Hmm.
Because it was the algorithms were there, but the algorithms are designed in a certain box,
mm-hmm.
which says as long as things are within this box, they work well. But when you get out of that box, nobody knows what they do.
Wow.
So, but there's lots of great stuff that happens there. And
yeah.
statistics is probably the one thing I'd go back to say, get a good statistics course.
Mm-hmm.
It will never hurt you, and it will always help
you. I'll keep that in mind.
Yeah. All right. Last question, maybe. Do you have a favorite theorem that you want to go on about?
Oh, gosh. I mean, it's a hard one. It's a hard one because, you know, in some ways, the fundamental theorem of algebra that says every polynomial has roots over the complex numbers
mm-hmm.
is a favorite in part because of its history, just
mm-hmm.
the Gauss's PhD thesis at the age of 21 was giving a proof of the fundamental theorem of algebra, arguably the first proof. Certainly Gauss argued it was the first proof of it.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, others had proofs that maybe had gaps in them,
mm-hmm.
but Gauss ended up giving four proofs of that over his
wow.
lifetime.
Yeah.
Only one of which is the one that we think of as the really beautiful proof, which is to go to the complex numbers and
mm-hmm.
show and work in the complex numbers with showing everything is holomorphic and doing all the fun stuff that way.
Yeah.
But in fact, it's kind of just a beautiful proof that puts together sort of what I think of as the understanding that math is a whole,
mm-hmm.
that, you know, you can't prove the fundamental theorem of algebra really without doing good analysis. I mean, you can. There's a really complicated way to prove it using algebra,
yeah.
but nobody in their right mind would do that.
Yeah.
You know, sort of in that same vein, the prime number theorem is a great theorem that's that says that the number of primes is roughly 1 over log, the density of the primes is roughly log n over n.
Mm-hmm.
It's much more precise than that. The log n over n was known before the prime number theorem.
Mm-hmm.
But it's this beautiful theorem that it's about prime numbers, and yet the right proofs of it involve complex analysis, involve the complex numbers.
Mm-hmm.
Why should a proof about how many prime numbers there are involve complex numbers?
Mm-hmm.
Now, there was, over time, a proof that was considered it's funny how we have these words, the simple proof
mm-hmm.
of the prime number theorem, which is anything but simple, but it does not involve complex numbers.
Yeah.
Mm.
That was a goal for people for 30, 40 years. In fact, to how do you find a proof that does not use the complex numbers
mm-hmm.
of the prime number theorem? And it was discovered, but it's not an easy proof.
Yeah.
Nobody in their right mind thinks that's the proof of the prime. That's the right proof of the prime number theorem for understanding forgetting to it easily.
Mm-hmm.
It gives you a different understanding. But so I gave you two. I haven't said one.
It's still fine.
Wow,
yeah,
that's
awesome.
Great.
All right, thank you for giving us some time to do
thank
this.
You.
Absolutely.
Thank you for all your advice.
Yeah.
You're very welcome, and, you know, go man. Go man.